Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Tuesday, November 8th. Today, we're talking to Colorado Sun water reporter Chris Outcault about findings from an international researcher on how Colorado's underground water is vanishing. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Xcel Energy. Colorado has some of the nation's best wind and solar resources, and Xcel Energy is putting them to work for you. Their nation-leading wind energy expansion is reducing our carbon footprint while producing some of the lowest-cost electricity on the Colorado grid. Learn more at xcelenergy.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1887, the notorious gambler and gunslinger Doc Holliday died in Glenwood Springs. Born in Georgia in 1851, Holliday came of age as his state endured invasion and defeat in the Civil War. He earned a degree in dentistry in Philadelphia, but found alcohol and cards more enjoyable. Holliday visited Colorado for the first time in 1876, just after voters approved the state constitution on Independence Day, and he dealt cards at a gambling house in Denver. He left town shortly after wounding a dissatisfied customer in a knife fight. In the spring of 1879, he helped Bat Masterson recruit fighters for the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad as they feuded with the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad over access to Leadville during the Royal Gorge War. Holliday earned his notoriety at the shootout at the OK Corral in Tombstone, Arizona, and became a legend after joining Wyatt Earp on his vendetta ride against the Cowboys gang. Holliday dealt cards in Trinidad and Pueblo before being seized to face trial in Arizona as a result of the extrajudicial killings. Sympathetic authorities in Pueblo trumped up charges against him to delay the process, a tactic Colorado lawyers thereafter called holidaying. Governor Pitkin rejected extradition, and Holliday eventually joined up with Earp in the boomtown of Gunnison. In the summer of 1882, Holliday settled in Leadville. His lifelong battle with tuberculosis worsened with altitude and his liberal consumption of alcohol. He moved to a Glenwood Springs sanatorium in hopes of easing his symptoms in 1887. Wheezing constantly and prematurely gray, Holliday died at age 36 and was buried in Pioneer Cemetery. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun invites you to hear from working journalists who have been covering the 2022 election season. Hear about their perspectives, experiences, and more with political reporter Jesse Paul. Registration is free. The event will be held virtually on November 17th from 6 to 7 p.m. Learn more at coloradosun.com/events. Now our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you today. I'm also grateful to be talking to our water reporter, Chris Outcault. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Carol.
It's been a couple months since we talked, and I've been following all of your water reporting and water stories from up where your bureau in Garfield County, sitting up in Carbondale. How are things up there?
Pretty good, pretty good. We've got we've been getting some snow up here the last week or two, so the mountains have a nice white coating on them, which is good for the water world and also just a pretty landscape. So yeah, things are good.
You can still see Mount Sopris out your window?
Indeed, indeed.
Good. I envy that. And speaking of water, one of the things I wanted to talk about is you had this really fascinating story Monday on coloradosun.com about an international water researcher who was highlighting our Colorado basin's disappearing groundwater. So can you tell us a little bit about the researcher, I think from Saskatchewan, and what it is that he's noticed over the last 20 years on our basin?
Yeah, this professor, Jay Famiglietti, was giving a keynote talk last week at a conference down in Denver put on by the CSU SPUR, the Water and West Symposium. And he was highlighting a bunch of research that he's been a part of. It goes back to the 90s, but it really kind of kicked in 2002. And he's using satellites to track basically changes in water mass across the globe. And he's been doing this. There was a mission that ran from 02 to 2017, I believe, and then they just restarted a second mission. But they've got two satellites up in the air. It's NASA satellites, and they can use those to track the increase or decrease in water mass in different parts across the globe. And one of the things we highlighted in the piece was just how some of those changes have applied to the Colorado River Basin, which we've been reporting on a bunch these last several months. So it's interesting to hear his research.
Absolutely. And so he probably was looking at water storage in Lake Powell and Lake Mead and what else in the basin, and how do they measure it? How are they measuring with these satellites?
Yeah. So the how it works is really fascinating. He was describing in his talk about how these satellites can basically measure changes in water mass by responding to gravitational adjustments. So, you know, say a big snowstorm dumped a bunch of snow on the Rockies up here in the Central Mountains, the satellites could then observe a slightly greater gravitational pull from that water mass being on the ground, and it would adjust the height of the satellite ever so slightly. And then they could take that data and map it accordingly. And then conversely, if an area that the satellite is flying over is drier and has a little bit of less of a gravitational pull, and so it adjusts the satellite height accordingly, and then they can use that information as well. So the satellite is responding in real time to the gravitational changes that are caused by the water mass on the ground.
That's fascinating. Yeah, it's fascinating research. So, you know, obviously he pinpointed the Colorado River Basin, and it also, I think in your piece, you highlighted that this is happening, of course, all over the globe, from California's Central Valley to the Midwestern Ogallala Aquifer, to parts of India and North Africa and the Arabian Peninsula. Is he pinpointing, in addition to, you know, climate change, what else is impacting these precipitous plummets in groundwater levels?
Yeah, so a lot of the groundwater is used for food production. So we think about that here in the Colorado River Basin, agricultural production. And he was, the point he was making as he was presenting this research is that we write about this a ton on ColoradoSun.com, but we spend a lot of time talking about surface water and water that we can see in rivers and streams and in reservoirs. And we've seen a lot of decline in that over the last, even just in the last 3 years, but definitely over the last 20. And his point was that he's used these satellites to map some of the groundwater, and those groundwater levels and those underground aquifers in some cases are disappearing quite a bit faster than even the surface water that we've watched disappear quite a bit over the last couple of years. So he was using it to kind of compare the two. You know, it's easy to pay attention to the surface water because we can see the levels at Lake Powell drop in real time. You can go online and look what those levels are, but it's harder to pay attention to the groundwater situation just because you can't see it. So he was using the research in this talk to sort of highlight that comparison.
Yeah, it's really wild. And then did he address ocean level, sea level rising, or what's going on with glacial melts at the poles?
Yeah, one of the points that he made in his talk, which I thought was really interesting, is that, you know, some of this groundwater that gets pulled out and then used to irrigate agricultural fields might find its way back into a stream or some sort of system that then falls all the way down to the oceans. And so he was describing that this groundwater depletion has actually become a significant contributor to sea level rise. So just another little bit of a thing to worry about out there in the water world.
Right, because we needed more, didn't we? You know, and his warning, you write, comes at a time when some Colorado communities already, you know, are looking deep underground for water. And some of the aquifers that make up the Denver Basin, the wells have to go deeper and deeper to access water. Are there certain communities in the area who, you know, who attended this conference or who might be responsive to this research?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, so the Denver Basin is groundwater on the Front Range that is used by a number of different communities and is not a, you know, it's not a renewable resource. You've had places like Douglas County that have been looking for other sources of water. There was a controversial proposal earlier this year to look at maybe taking some water from the San Luis Valley. That community is actually another one that relies on an underground aquifer in different ways. There are two sort of separated aquifers down there that folks use for agricultural purposes. And so, yeah, there are communities around Colorado that rely on underground aquifer water. Not as much so as some of the other states around the Colorado River Basin. I think Arizona relies on groundwater quite a bit more. But, and you know, one of the other folks we spoke to in the piece was talking about how, surface water is really kind of king in Colorado, and all the compacts that we have, that a lot of times the discussion of groundwater gets translated even into more of a surface water context. So that's really a conversation we hear a lot here in Colorado, is how are we doing with surface water and the deliveries that are required under some of these interstate compacts and things like that.
Right. And that's something that you have covered and are continuing to cover extensively. So I'll encourage our readers to just follow your stories on ColoradoSun.com about all of these deep water issues. Is there a way for our listeners to look at some of the images that these satellites return? Is that anything that's available for public consumption?
You know, that's a good question. I think, I don't know about images. I think Jay was saying that actually some of this data is available for public consumption, but I haven't, that they post some of it publicly, but I haven't taken the time to go look at that yet. So it might be something that's out there, but that's not something I'm totally sure about.
Well, you know, and just a reminder of what you said earlier is he's a professor of hydrology and executive director of the Global Institute for Water Security at the University of Saskatchewan in Canada. So that might be something that our listeners want to go check out also and see what research is coming out of there.
There are so many smart water researchers and thinkers and policy folks here in Colorado that deal with these topics. And we talk to many of them regularly for our coverage, but it was neat to hear from somebody out of town, so to speak,
right,
and get their take.
Well, thanks for chasing them down, Chris. And
yeah,
Thanks to everyone who helped produce today's podcast and to our production partners, Pirate Audio. I hope you have a wonderful day out there, and I sincerely hope that you can join us for the next Daily Sun Up.
Read more on this story at ColoradoSun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Welcome to Election Day, Colorado. If you have questions about the ballot or need to register today, check out our voter guide at ColoradoSun.com. We have a breakdown of all the major state races and ballot questions, as well as information about walk-up registration at a polling center today. And through the day, the Sun's staff will be fanned out across the state talking with voters, candidates, and ballot question supporters. Our live blog will be updated throughout the day, and we should start to see initial results soon after the polls close at 7 p.m. Our goal is to post stories when we know a race is called. A volunteer-led project to identify the hottest and coolest parts of Boulder shows cooling stations and other solutions are most needed in the city's commercial corridors and in low-income neighborhoods. Downtown Boulder and other largely commercial areas will now be targeted for heat reduction activities, such as by increasing tree planting to reduce heat. But more importantly, lower-income neighborhoods and places with fewer trees will be targeted for solutions such as by enhancing people's access to cooling centers, low-cost air conditioning, electric heat pumps, and possibly evaporative coolers. Alan Lee Phillips will spend the rest of his life in jail after being sentenced Monday in the 1982 murders of two women near Breckenridge. The 71-year-old Phillips was convicted in September of two counts of first-degree murder after DNA testing identified him as a suspect in the cold case. Authorities say the bodies of Annette Schnee, then 21, and Barbara Bobby Jo Oberholzer, 29, were found in separate locations and they had no connection to each other. Both were believed to have been killed when they disappeared while hitchhiking outside Breckenridge more than 40 years ago. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to ColoradoSun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.